From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. And today I am joined by the NAPS National President, Brian Wagner. He has not been a guest for quite some time, so we are so pleased for him to join us today.
Good morning, Bob. Good Friday morning.
Yeah, it's the 31st of May. Things are getting hot and serious here in Washington, legislatively and politically.
That's true. And it was pretty hot this past May when NAPS got its final pay package from the post office. And let me just kind of briefly kind of go over that.
Sure, I mean, sure, because our folks really are interested in hearing about that, I guess.
And they are. And we've heard from the members. You know, on April 30th, the fact-finding panel made its report and recommendations, and they speak for itself. You know, NAPS really regrets and is disappointed that the Postal Service disagreed with and really rejected many of the findings and recommendations of this neutral three-member panel. And they unanimously, in the report, you know, showed that there is major concerns for EAS pay policies and schedules. These changes are necessary to assure the statutory compliance and provide for the engaged supervisory workforce. You know, but I will let you know, NAPS is exploring our options on what possible actions we may be able to take in light of this May 15th pay decision. You know, but that's where we're at right now, Bob. You know, when we talk about engaging, it's a good time for our members to engage in the Postal Pulse survey.
Yeah, I mean, the folks who pay attention to the Postal Pulse survey is not only the Postal Service itself, but the business community and, most importantly, members of Congress. What's in this Postal Pulse? What do they look at?
Well, they're looking at how the EAS and all the employees feel about their work treatment at the post office. You know, how are they being treated? Are they engaged? You know, the post office, you know, put out in their own May 23rd USPS News Talk, their online newsletter, that says taking the Postal Pulse is a best practice, participating in it. So our members are encouraged to voluntarily take the Postal Pulse. This is a time where 100% of the EAS should be completing the survey truthfully to let their voices be heard. And remember, the Postal Pulse runs from May 14th to June 14th. So members have an opportunity to have their voices heard on how they feel their work environment is at the Postal Service.
Now, what Congress and others look at is the best practices in engaging, particularly middle management and frontline managers in the operations of any institution, whether it be a Fortune 500 or the Postal Service.
Well, what they say is that a more engaged workforce is more productive, more efficient. You know, it adds to the value of the company. So when you see that the past Postal Pulse results have showed that the Postal Service's employees feel were one in the one percentile of the lowest of the low, it's very disheartening to see that that's not a good sign when we just got the Gallup survey that says that the Postal Service is rated the highest of all federal agencies.
Yeah, but at the same time, and the disconnect is that the Postal Regulatory Commission just evaluated performance of the Postal Service in terms of service, and I think in almost every index but one, the Postal Service's service to the public has deteriorated.
And when you see that and compare it to the Postal Pulse survey scores that we've seen over the last five surveys, it's very challenging to see that the post office has a lot of work to do to get engaged, especially the EAS. And that's the biggest challenge we're seeing right now. Our members are frustrated, and we've heard about it. But we've also heard from them at the state conventions. And one of the big things is we heard their voices and really their SPAC contributions at state conventions going over very well and participation.
Let me ask you this. Do members make establish a relationship between the effectiveness of Congress in sort of pursuing certain issues that are outside of the capability, let's say, of the Postal Service to do on its own, or if the Postal Service doesn't want to take actions, for example, or take the wrong actions? Like, for example, we just heard at recent hearings that the Postmaster General is once again considering reducing from 6 days to 5 day delivery. Folks pay attention to that.
Folks pay attention to that seriously. And, you know, to go from 6 to 5 day delivery when we're really delivering 7 days a week on packages, people listen to that. And that doesn't bode well for the service of the organization to cut service delivery.
Yeah, and at the same time, just this week, FedEx announced that it was increasing its deliveries to 7 days a week, and it was going to add 2 million delivery points to these seven-day deliveries. And these 2 million delivery points are currently being delivered the Postal Service is serving those 2 million delivery points.
And you're right on that point where we have to be more innovative in what we're doing at the Postal Service. We make sure we're doing the delivery, make sure we're doing the scans. You know, that package business is huge for the Postal Service. You know, I was at the National Postal Forum, had an opportunity to go to the Chief Operating Officer's operations meeting and meet with some of the mailers. You know, they have a lot of equipment going in on package delivery.
Yeah, 35% of the of mail volume, I think, is still first-class mail, letter mail. So, I mean, it still plays a role, but you have a burgeoning e-commerce business that the Postal Service needs to access. And the only way to access that, really, is through to eliminate legislative restrictions on the Postal Service to operate effectively and competitively in that environment.
Well, e-commerce is critical right now. Like you just said, we have people going online to do their business. You know, if the post office can see more innovative ways to deliver the mail, but also we need Congress to act with legislation to make sure that we can ship beer and wine, you know, and also participate in other e-commerce actions about maybe doing other services that, you know, selling licenses and things like that, or even going to postal banking.
Even going to postal banking. Now, NAPS has been at the forefront of advocating for reform of the postal service through legislative actions. Now, there's three criteria that we are looking at as a basis of legislation. Can you sort of enumerate those three touch points?
Well, we've always talked about postal reform. But, you know, it's basically finding that relief from that liability of the pre-funding of the future retirees' health benefits. You know, but that alone is not the silver bullet that's going to save the post office. We will require flexible rate settings to increase postal revenue. That's critical. But also that postal innovation we just talked about providing customers the opportunity to engage in e-commerce. Again, post office being able to ship beer and wine, or customers having that option. Increasing our market share in the package delivery business. You know, we used to do postal banking. Returning to postal banking to serve those communities that are currently underserved by the financial industry.
Now, when our executive vice president, Ivan Butz, goes up to Capitol Hill, as he does very frequently, to promote these issues on behalf of NAPS and on behalf of all EAS postal employees, he brings these issues to light. But if we drill down and the effectiveness of our members to assist Ivan and the legislative team here back home in pursuing those actions, what have you seen at our state conventions to educate our members to sort of bring the message to Congress?
Well, you know, we started the state convention season in mid-April, and I've been to a few state conventions. Not only is the members very active in getting donations and promoting SPAC, our Supervisor Political Action Committee, raising funds for SPAC, but the messaging, when our members came to LTS this past March, they took our message, our agenda, and took it back to the field. And I've been at conventions where they have great presentations on our issues regarding, you know, postal reform, House resolutions, you know, maintaining the, you know, door delivery, no privatization, six-day mail delivery. You know, we also have been promoting that all EAS have Merit System Protection Board, MSPB rights. So, and you see the passion out there. Those, let's say, state legislative chairs or those branch officers who've gone to the LTS and brought back, we asked them to bring it back to the district. We asked our members to bring it back to the field, and they've done it, and it's been phenomenal.
Yeah, and they're attending events back home in the field. And, you know, we just, when we look at the magazine, the Postal Supervisor magazine, we just see the picture of them with the members of Congress. But there's a lot of conversation that occurs at these events, and they get to know their member of Congress personally, because it's not only establishing a legislative presence and legislative expertise that we demonstrate, but we have the ability to enable our members to establish true friendships and relationships with these members of Congress, so they will be the go-to people if there's a question about a particular bill or a particular section in a postal bill.
You're right on that, where when our members go locally and they're seeing one-on-one, they have more time to interact with their congressional leader and being able to give in detail the issues at hand and what we can do to make sure that we can get our bill through Congress, get it passed. Our members, and when they ask to go to an event, we're more than happy to assist with them. That's why they need to donate to the SPAC, our Supervisor Political Action Committee. But it's those relationships we build locally. And when you walk into an office or you see your congressional leader out in public and they know you by name, you know you're making a connection. And they say, oh, post office. Yes, we've got some issues there. We need to improve service. We need to help the post office get on financial track. We need postal reform.
Because the postal service is such a personal issue to many members of Congress, because that is the one governmental service that touches every single person and every single business every day.
You bring up a good point on that, Bob, because I've had an opportunity locally to go to some political fundraisers. And we sit around the table. And yes, there are many lobbyists on different issues that the congressman or congresswoman want to hear about. But when I can talk about I'm a postal employee or former postal employee and I've done it, I'm speaking on what I know about the business itself. And that truly adds value. I worked in the business. I understand the business. And when our members do the same thing, those congressional leaders understand we know what we're doing and that's why we need these reforms. That's why we need this legislation to continue the service to the American public.
Also, our members come with a high degree of credibility on talking about postal issues because they're not sitting up in an ivory tower crunching numbers. They are actually in the field delivering the service.
Right. And not only delivering the service, listening to the customers and what the customers need and what the customers expect from the postal service. And by being able to give the customers what they want, and we hear about that in service. Customers want service. They want timely delivery. They want their package on time. They want to know where it's tracked. So where the postal service needs to make sure it has the infrastructure and the resources to be able to deliver to what the customers want. And we've talked about that with the postal executive, serving the postal customer. When you have over 4,500 business mailers at the National Postal Forum, they're in it for the long haul. But they want to make sure that the post office is in it too. So we want to make sure what we're doing at NAPS with our congressional leaders on trying to get postal reform, legislation to make sure that we continue with the service that the American public voted that we're the best as a federal agency, that we continue that action and just keep moving forward. Don't look back, but move forward.
Yeah, not only does the American public value us more than any other federal agency, but they trust us more than any other federal agency. And with that trust comes a high degree of expectation. And they don't want Congress or the Postal Service itself to undermine that trust.
True. And when the American public, and I was a carrier for 12 years. Most of them, when you look at when a customer sees, they either see their clerk at the window or their carrier. But behind the scenes as a team, as us EAS managing the operation to make sure that our message, the postal brand, the USPS brand is out there and it's quality, that the members know of Congress, even our customers know, when they go to their mailbox, that they know it's trusted delivery. They don't have to worry about some privatization company coming in and taking over, not knowing who's going to be there. They can trust the Postal Service to make the delivery. We have some challenges. That's why we need Congress to work with us on these postal reforms so we can get the resources necessary to continue the great service.
Now, let's talk a little bit about in the Senate right now, because pending before the Senate, the full Senate, are now two nominees to the Board of Governors. They're just waiting for a final vote. The president also nominated another board of governor who is yet to receive a hearing before the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Let me ask you this question. The absence of a full complement, a quorum of the Board of Governors, how do you think that affects postal operations and postal governance generally?
Well, I think it's a challenge because here what you have is the Postmaster General and the Deputy Postmaster General who are a part of the Board of Governors, but you don't have a quorum to make the business decisions necessary. So right now, you're working without a quorum or guidance from the full board. So you're making some decisions. And one of the things at the hearing that they had on April 30th, Brenda Lawrence, Congressman Brenda Lawrence, made a comment about getting these Board of Governors appointed so they can hold the post office accountable for their actions. So those are some challenges. We need these Board of Governors to help us guide the Postal Service to financial stability, but also give guidance on how best to serve this our American public.
Right, and that does affect filings before the Postal Regulatory Commission in certain instances, failing to have a quorum. Also, long-term planning of the Postal Service, the so-called 10-year plan that the Congress has been eagerly awaiting from the Postal Service, that could have been impacted, or the delay could have been impacted by the absence of a quorum on the Board of Governors, but just general operational issues and contracting and purchasing fleet vehicles about what you do and how you who you contract with could be, impact service to the American public.
I agree wholeheartedly. To help with the guidance and the business of the post office is critical. You know, otherwise, you have a small group trying to run an office or a huge organization like the Postal Service and make sure you're doing it efficiently and needing the guidance to get that done.
Yeah, look, you mentioned at the beginning about a couple of House resolutions, and I just want to take this opportunity to sort of summarize where we're standing on the resolutions. Now, it's important to recognize that these House resolutions are non-binding, which means is that even if the House passes these resolutions, and if there were to be a Senate companion to these resolutions, and they passed, it wouldn't go necessarily go to, it would not go to the president. Rather, these are messaging resolutions that sort of indicate where Congress is, the sense of the House, the sense of the Senate. So in the first case, we have Congresswoman Susan Davis of California introduced a House Resolution 23 to maintain door delivery of the mail. There are 192 co-sponsors. What's important to note is 218, there are 435 members of the House of Representatives. A majority of the members of Congress is 218. So 218 is sort of a magical number. There are 192 co-sponsors to door delivery. That's impactful, isn't that, Brian?
Very impactful. That means people are interested in making sure that they maintain the door delivery, but also they're concerned about the service of the post office.
Let's also talk another issue about service, which is related, and that's House Resolution 54 that was introduced by Congressman Jerry Connolly from Virginia. That is to maintain six-day deliveries. We sort of mentioned that within the context of FedEx going to 7 days. So it's sort of bizarre that the Postal Service would talk to the House Committee and talk about reducing to 5 days. But to maintain six-day delivery, 246 co-sponsors. That's more than a House majority.
That's more than a House majority. And going back, when you're looking at it, we talk about that mail moment. When you go to the mailbox and see what's inside, and then to cut that down to five-day delivery instead of six, because the American public is accustomed to trusting the post office to be there for them 6 days a week, at least on the regular. And now they're surprised that they're seeing delivery on the seventh day, you know, Sunday Amazon or whatever, Sunday package delivery. You know, they're like, wow, we're out there making delivery. We're serving the American public on what they ask for. Customers aren't asking for less. They're asking for more service. They're asking for more efficient service. And we need to make sure that we have our congressional leaders looking at this to get the legislation passed that's necessary for the post office to have the infrastructure, the resources to ensure that the American public is served by the Postal Service as efficient as possible.
And one other resolution I'd just like to mention, and this is House Resolution number 33, which was introduced by Congressman Steve Lynch, Massachusetts. And also there is a Senate companion, S-Res 99, introduced by Senator Gary Peters of Michigan, who is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. And that is against the administration and White House proposal to privatize the Postal Service. There are 248 co-sponsors to that legislation. That is 30 co-sponsors more than a majority. And in the Senate, there are 49 co-sponsors, just one short of at least a 50-50, reaching the sort of equilibrium in the Senate. There's a goal, of course, to get a majority, but that ought to send a very strong message, not only to the White House and to the Treasury Department and to the Office of Management and Budget, where this all is coming from, but to those out, you know, at these think tanks that are promoting privatization, like the Cato Institute and the Lexington Institute and others.
But they need to go back and look at that Gallup survey that shows that the Postal Service is the most trusted agency out there and most respected. You go to privatization, why would you leave a company or get rid of the Postal Service when the American public trusts them so much to do the job? Privatizing is not going to save the Postal Service. It's going to hurt the Postal Service. It's going to hurt the American public. Maintain the quality of the Postal Service that's been in existence for over 200 plus years.
And I think that the message within Congress is clear. I mean, you have, because you have major think tanks, that the conservative think tanks, as I said, the Cato Institute, Lexington Institute, and most importantly, the Heritage Institute, all banging the drum for privatization. In my view, and I think a lot out there, because they just can't fathom the idea that a government agency is so well thought of by the American public, because that sort of denies every touch point, every idea that they hold or they want to promote about the federal government.
I always look at it from when I was working on my degrees, and one of my professors made the comment, you know, you have in business, you maximize the value of the shareholder. In private company, it's shareholders. So you're not maximizing the value of the customer or the service. It's the shareholder. The Postal Service doesn't have shareholders. We have stakeholders. And our stakeholders are our business customers, our residential customers, our employees, you know, those we serve in the nonprofit and in the profit business, you know, with the mail. So when you're looking at a private company coming in, their main goal is maximize the value of the shareholders or their stock or their dollar, the bottom dollar, not the serving of the customer. So that's critical where the Postal Service, yes, we need to get on financial stability, but we're not doing it to make billions of dollars in profit for the betterment of stockholders, but we're here to make sure we serve the stakeholders, which are the customers.
That's almost as though you would say your military should be a profit-making sort of enterprise, but we don't do that.
No.
Or your law enforcement agencies should be profit-making. We don't do that. It's about the value of the service and whether or not they do their job.
Right.
Our folks deliver the mail 6 days a week, hit the targets. They should be hitting the targets more. You know, more a better on-time performance. Nevertheless, it is better probably. It is better than any agency that there is in the federal government.
You know, we brought up the state conventions going out, and we do a Q&A, the resident officers and the executive board members, and we hear from the members about how passionate they are about doing a great job. Every piece, every day. Going back, I mean, they're so dedicated and making sure we get the mail delivered. It's not about did the company stock go up 20% or 30%? It's about did we serve the customer? Are we here? And you see the passion in our members in the EAS about getting the job done and making sure our fleet's running efficiently, our mail's being delivered efficiently, we're serving the customer. You know, and that's all behind the scenes because, to be honest with you, when you're looking at, yes, the supervisor managers aren't the face of the post office. We know it's the clerks and the carriers. But in order to make those services shine, we need a strong EAS management system behind that to make sure it's running efficiently. What I would call the chief of staff, the stage manager.
The conductor.
The conductor. You know, things get done. It's behind the scenes as long as we get it done properly, and we need the resources for that.
So let's use that analogy because I sort of like that analogy. You have the composer who writes the music. That's probably Congress, maybe the Postal Service also. You have the conductor who's responsible for getting all the elements of the orchestra to play in sync and to give a beautiful concerto, a beautiful symphony. If the orchestra can't play together, or you have a couple of woodwinds that are out of sync, or the string section isn't playing together, I don't care if it's a Mozart piece or a Beethoven piece. It's not going to work.
It's not going to work if you don't have the conductor. I mean, you may give me a tambourine, but I'm definitely going to be out of tune. Especially in a symphony. But that's how. But you're right on that. It's the behind the scenes that gets the work done and making the smart business decisions. And every day, Our EAS have to make the smart business decisions today to get the mail delivered. With the constraints that we have and with regard to not having the legislation right now to help get the infrastructure necessary, again, going back to a postal reform that takes care of the pre-funding liability, making sure the post office has the innovation to be able to do e-commerce, you know. So those are the other things, and being able to provide flexibility in rate setting so that we can have the post office can have more revenue. It all ties in, just like you just mentioned, this orchestra with the composer, the conductor, and the orchestra themselves. Everybody has to be on the same play. That singing from the same hymnal, playing from the same music script.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, I need to ask you this question, Brian, because everyone is waiting. What is the flavor of the day?
Bob, I've been wanting to share this one for a long time. I will tell you, my oldest granddaughter got married in the month of May. We surprised her, coordinated a Sunday ice cream Sunday bar at her wedding, but we went to this ice cream place local, the Spotted Cow, my favorite place. Mm-hmm. They designed or developed her special flavor, strawberry lemon cheesecake. It was her special flavor that they developed for the wedding. Strawberry lemon cheesecake is the flavor of the day, actually the flavor of a May.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for being with us today, Brian. So till next week.